This is Place Matters, a podcast at the intersection of race, place, and poverty, where we explore the belief that the path towards ending inequity and promoting prosperity is through the work of holistic neighborhood development. Welcome to the final series focusing on one of FCS's three pillars. During this season of Place Matters, we will focus on the pillar of economic development. I'm Sean Duncan, the Director of Training and Consulting for FCS, and the host for Place Matters. Food deserts are communities that lack reasonable access to affordable, healthy grocery options. Being on a limited income while also living in a food desert compounds disadvantage for over 2 million Americans. The grocery options that are available in food deserts tend to be significantly more expensive and way less healthy. And a disproportionate percentage of food deserts are majority Black and brown neighborhoods. And one of the things we have found is that, ironically, the large chain grocery stores with their expansive parking lots do more to perpetuate food deserts than to solve them. So what do we do? How can we create right-sized grocery stores in neighborhoods of concentrated poverty where they are most needed? We're excited today in this conversation to share with you one of the key partners that has made Carver Market possible, Jimmy Wright. Jimmy runs a local grocery store in Opelika, Alabama called Wright's Market that is doing the same kind of innovative and restorative work in his neighborhood. Jimmy also operates Wright Food Solutions, consulting with retailers, wholesalers, nonprofits, and community development groups in the areas of food access and food security, with a focus specifically on inner city and rural America. And not only do we share similar work, values, and desires to end food security in food deserts, we also share a supply chain. So listen in as I speak with Jimmy Wright and Jeff Delp, who's our Director of Economic Development, about the work of turning a food desert into a food oasis. Well, Jimmy, thanks for hanging out with us today to talk about the grocery business. But first, I want to hear your own story. How did you get into this work? What brought you to the grocery world?
Well, as far as my career overall, my dad was a carpenter, and he was doing some work for a guy that had a little small store in downtown Opelika, Alabama. And the guy asked my dad, said, hey, he said, I need a little grocery store in this area where I've got some rental properties. And so my dad built a little 70 by 30 store. Huh. And so when he finished, the guy said, hey, I don't really have anybody to run this place. Would you and your wife, my mother, would you run the store until I found somebody else? Well, you know, it's 1973 and there's never been anybody else. So ran a store. My dad, my mother and I were the first three employees. I was 12 years old. Mm. And I think I've shared this with Jeff. I was absolute worst employee that we have ever had in the history of the store. All the kids, my manager today will say, man, this kid is just not going to make it. And I said, no, I know somebody that was worse than that. So, I would do something. And we lived across the street growing up from the store. And I would do something goofy, and my dad would send me home. And then the store would get busy, and he'd call me back. And so I tell people I could get fired four or five times a day sometimes in there. But I grew up in the business, and just really, Opelika was founded, the anchor was on textile mills. Hmm. And so grew up watching those people work in those mills, and it was hot, and they would come out of those things covered in lint and dust and stuff. And we had two. And if not for those two mills, our store would never have survived. But I watched those people growing up, and as tough as that work was, they had the most highest level of workmanship, Even those conditions, they worked hard. They did great work. Even again, in that environment, they were the ones who taught me in Sunday school, who coached my little league baseball team. So I learned a few things watching that, the work ethic, taking pride in what you do, a commitment to community. And so it was one of those things in life, I guess, that just kind of stuck, so to speak. So fast forward, I bought the store from my previous employer in 1997. And just been very fortunate to be there. The store's been very successful, even with all the competition that we've had. But I go back to a lot of our success is just what I learned in watching those people and what they did, and just understanding the people who sometimes have a challenge in life. And not only has that made our business, you know, stay in tune and with that customer base, but also was what made it pretty easy to get involved at Carver Market. Because I know what it's like to have a store in an area that is needed by people that are trying very hard. And so that's kind of how we got where we are today.
Yeah. So tell us, for those that are unfamiliar with Opelika, tell us a little bit about where your store is located and why are you personally committed to keeping this store open and keeping it going and continuing to see it succeed?
Well, we're in Opelika, Alabama. We are next door to Auburn, home of Auburn University. We're about an hour and a half southeast, whatever, from Atlanta, and right down Interstate 85. So I can get on 85 and take one turn and be in Carver Market up there.
Is that easy? Again,
yeah. Our community, again, was anchored on textile mills. Those eventually closed, as much many did throughout the Southeast. We moved from that economic anchor to we made 8-track tapes.
Oh, wow.
Tires. And the exercise equipment where you had this barbell, the plastic weights with the concrete inside of it, those were our three entities there. They all closed, and we got very fortunate, had some leadership in the city that developed a new industrial park, and now we've got a myriad of people. We're in this, what they refer to as this area between Hyundai in Montgomery, Alabama, and Kia in West Point, Georgia. And so we get a lot of these tier one, tier two suppliers for the automotive parts. But what kept me in the store, again, was certainly, you know, making a living, but more so serving the customers that continue to come there today. And it's just what I've done. And again, I've never got up a day in life and said, man, oh, man, I wish I would have done something different in life. You know, we have bad days like everybody else. But just committed to those customers and they've been very loyal and supportive of our business over the years.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about what's got Carver Market and historic South Atlanta in a relationship with Wright's Market and Opelika, Alabama. What's the marriage between these two entities? What's going on here?
Well, you heard Jimmy. He said since 1973, no one else has come along. So we're vowing for that story to be same. And so we entered in a partnership with Jimmy in, 2013, 2014? I think Jimmy's plan was to do it for maybe a few weeks, a few months. And here we are 10 years later, still in partnership. And so so 2013, we were looking to open a grocery store in South Atlanta. And of course, we didn't start out with, hey, let's do it ourselves. We partnered with the city, looked for a larger chain store to come in, and none were willing to come. And somehow, I don't remember how, but our housing program had worked with Jimmy in Opelika to work on some housing options. And so somehow we got connected, and Jimmy said, sure, I'll help you. We'll help, you know, get the store started. And, of course, you know, supply side is the hardest thing. And so there was a moment in February, we were slated to open up in like 3 or 4 months, and I had talked to all these convenience store suppliers and all these health food providers, and you know, just did not know where in the world we were going to get our supply chain from. And Jimmy called me. I think I was with my friends up in somewhere in Illinois over winter break. And he said, "Hey, Jeff, we'll supply you for to get you started, and then we'll figure it out." And so 10 years later, we are still here. And so for us to get groceries into our store in downtown Atlanta, the capital of the Southeast, I drive that 90 miles down I-85 once a week to pick up our groceries from Jimmy's store. So he allows us to use his wholesale connection to order food and bring it into our store, so we can offer a wider selection of food, as well as keep the price point where our customers can realistically support it.
So you're telling me in the big city of Atlanta you couldn't figure this out? You had to go an hour and a half south of here into Alabama to figure this thing out?
So we could have figured it out, but the amount of money and time and effort that we would have put into it would not still be open. So to be fair, there is no Carver Market without Jimmy Wright. That's I'm not exaggerating that. Yeah. Well, at least as is, right? We could run a store, but to make it look and feel like a grocery store, having the selection we have, having the various meats and dairy products and grocery items that we have is a direct result of being able to access a supply chain that our store, our size, typically is not allowed to access.
So there's the obvious like functional partnership, like Carver Market can't stock our shelves if we don't have Jimmy Wright and Wright's Market in this partnership. But as you guys have worked together over the last decade, what have you seen as being some of the shared struggles or common vision or values? Like, what have you seen as similarities between Opelika, South Atlanta, and what it's been like to do this work?
Well, Sean, if I can go back just a second and talk about kind of how I met Jeff at FCS.
Mm. Yeah.
But along the lines of the what I was sharing earlier about the customer base we have, we saw at Opelika exactly what you all have worked in Atlanta, and that is the challenges with affordable housing. Mm. And so, you know, I began to see a lot of these people that had worked in the mill, their houses had gotten older, the neighborhoods had changed, just really became an issue. So I went and saw our mayor one day and kind of laid it all out. He said, "Man, you're 100% right. How about figure out what to do?" I'm like, "Well, you is." So anyway, I had to kind of do a little research and all that stuff, and I found this group, FCS in Atlanta. And the more I read, I was like, these are the guys that know how to do this. And so I signed up for, I believe it's still referred to as open house. Is that correct?
That's right. We got one coming up in about a month and a half, actually.
And,
yeah.
So I came up for that and met Jim and Katie and Jeff, and just really started some, getting some little ideas and stuff. What you all have done, brought the mayor back in a group, and we visited. And when you talk about the values, really it started on the housing side. You know, but what you guys see in affordable, decent housing and safe places to live. Mm-hmm. And so from that standpoint, it started at a completely different subject or topic than it did the food store. And Jim came down and spoke to our entire community. And we got some things rolling down there. We've done some planning over the years. We've had some improvements. We're about to, hopefully we're close. We've got the initial drawings and everything for really, really nice affordable housing, mixed use development. And that would not be possible without FCS and the relationship that I had with them and met them years ago. So this has been very much for both sides, it's been a real great relationship. And yeah, we helped a bit in the grocery store, but you guys and what you do are helping change the community 90 miles away. Hmm. So our values are the same. Hmm. And that is serving our community, improving the quality of life of the people that live there. If neighborhoods have been challenged, it's restoring, you know, housing, it's restoring opportunities economically. It is restoring the pride and dignity back into a neighborhood. And so it really was been a blessing to me to get to know FCS and that whole work.
And so I think for me, the shared values are commitment to place and to people and to holistic way of serving those people. And you heard it in what Jimmy just said, housing, food, jobs, right? That, like, a community becomes whole when those things are healthy and without any, you can have a grocery store, but if you don't have good housing, you can have housing, but you don't have jobs. If you have jobs and not the other two, something's missing. And so other than Jimmy's amazing personality, what drew me to Jimmy was his deep commitment to place and to the people that he serves. One thing that a neighborhood like South Atlanta often is challenged with is we often have businesses that are here to serve the people, but not with people's best interest in mind, right? And that's where you get businesses that often end up taking from a community and not really investing in what's best for the people and not necessarily what's best for the business. And Jimmy is a businessman. Jimmy does a great job at running a business, but he also cares deeply for his community, and that is shown in how he runs his store and the many ways that he supports the community there in Opelika. And so while South Atlanta and Opelika are 90 miles apart geographically, they're also miles apart in other ways, but there's tons of similarities, especially how we go about serving our communities.
I remember going up and seeing visiting Jeff one day and thinking about the building, and you go back to the original store my dad built for this man and we all got started in, and the size was almost exactly the same. And so it was kind of like going back to my childhood when I started thinking about that. And I'd already been to the, you know, open house several months earlier. I remember Jeff calling me and said, "We've got this building. We open up a store." I said, "No, you don't." we started from the process of you don't really want to do this, you know. But I knew his commitment and what their vision was. So I remember going up on a particular day, and Jeff and I visited, and I think we went to lunch or something, and just listening to the story, what I'd already heard, and visiting with Jeff. And I remember driving home. And, you know, on the trip home, I was like, you know, these guys are doing good work. And they're committed to this. This is not somebody just trying to come in and, you know, be here a little while and go on. They've got a long-term commitment. They're very knowledgeable of what they do. If these guys can make that kind of commitment, I can figure out how to get groceries 90 miles to their store. And so that was that time in life where you're like, I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I still remember that day. And as Jeff said, this is the longest short-term relationship I've ever been involved in in my life, you know. But, and the other thing, you know,
that's so great.
I shared a little bit, and this, John, I guess, you know, you never know where telling your whole story can go. And you got so many people across the country that come and visit it with you all and spend some time in that open house. But, you know, it's helped me and other work across the country. I've done some work in the Mississippi Delta over there. Now, you know, the dynamics of some of those situations are very, very different. You go from, you know, maybe 50,000 people in the neighborhood to 500 people in a community somewhere, but still the same commonalities in the fact that a food store is an anchor to try to save a community like that. Affordable housing, So, you know, what I have learned from you all is something that I've been able to take on the road, so to speak, in other places. We're hoping to get a large grant from USDA that would allow us to work from Little Rock, Arkansas, through Memphis, to the Mississippi Delta, down to New Orleans.
Wow.
And so, again, you know, what I've learned from y'all on housing, what I've learned from y'all on how you anchor the store as part of the community, it's been very valuable. So you just never know when you guys tell the story, your story at FCS, you never know how far that can go. Mm. It can have very, very far outreaching, making a difference on that. So it's been a very, very special relationship with me, and very much a blessing. And between what I grew up and learned and then seeing what you guys do, that's allowed me to be out and help some other people out there.
Mm. You know, I think Jeff has carried your gospel of telling people, no, you really don't want to do a grocery store. So just know that he's also heard your story and has passed that along to others who've said, hey, we love what you guys are doing at Carver Market. I think we're going to do it. Jeff's like, nope. You should not. Don't do it. And so with that, like, what are those challenges? If you're trying, like, when we think grocery store, we all now have the mental model of like 21st century, like mega superstores. And that's the normal right now. But you guys are doing neighborhood scale grocery stores. What's the challenge in doing that? And why would you want, maybe, you know, try to talk people out of it? Like, what's the difficulty of doing grocery stores in that fashion?
Jeff, you want to go first and then?
Sure. So for us, it's two major factors that are the biggest challenges. I mean, obviously, any small business, there's a myriad of challenges, right? But the two that are unique to running a small store is one, as I talked about, supply side, right? Getting a variety of food at an affordable price into our store is a challenge. And if Jimmy decided tomorrow that he, you know, this relationship was over, you know, our store would fundamentally change. And so that's for sure one of the challenges. And then our best customer at the market is someone who's on foot, because there's larger chains do exist in Atlanta. And if you have a car, it's easy to get to those chains. And so to think through, okay, how do we care about this place and care about the people in this place and want to serve these folks very well, but knowing that it's really hard to compete with the bigger chains that's serving half of our neighborhood, but not the entirety of a neighborhood, right? They're serving the folks in their neighborhood who have a car, but they're not serving those without a car. If we could add 1,000, 2,000 people within, you know, half a mile of the store, with a supply chain, we would be amazing. It would go gangbusters, right? But the two of the things are out of our control. And so, that's really it, is how we've developed our cities and also how the grocery industry has really grown and adapted to how we have grown our cities. My guess, Jimmy, when you started the store in 1973, the supply side was a little different then than it is now. If we really wanted to, so part of the reason why I say no to those groups, Sean, is because some of it is the market's not designed to do what we're doing.
Yeah.
So unless you're committed long term and have the hack, it's really hard. So those are the two biggest challenges for me.
Mm-hmm. And I think wherever I go, the two things that I encourage people, you know, to look at is accessibility and affordability. Mm-hmm. You know, and for accessibility, a lot of them will say, hey, you know, we're going to do this or this. Well, that's fine. How are you going to get the product in the store at somewhat of an affordable price? You know, because you'll see some people that will try to do something and they end up in a supply situation where it is so expensive. The store is there, but it's at a price points that the neighborhood just can't afford. Mm. So there is that balance between those two things, accessibility and affordability. Mm. I think that what makes Carver unique, and this is the point I do try to share with people, if they continue, they want to go forward, it's just a sense of community that Carver Market has created in the South Atlanta. I think the coffee shop and all the food service offerings are a big piece of a neighborhood store. You know, the folks at Starbucks coined the third place thing a long time ago, but I think in South Atlanta that Carver Market is the third place for a lot of people. And for, as Jeff said, the ones that are on foot, they don't have transportation. We still see that as a huge issue across the country and urban areas and rural areas also, just the ability to get to a store. But I think overall, that sense of community is what sets the successful neighborhood markets apart from the other ones, as Jeff said, the commitment to be there. But it's just a place to go that they feel, you know, they feel like they're welcome. They feel like they're a part of it. And so that's just a big piece. And I think Jeff has done an outstanding job in creating that environment in Carver Market.
Thanks, Jimmy. Your check's coming in the mail. Appreciate that.
Hey guys, just jumping in here real quick with an opportunity for you to bring FCS's principles and practices to your neighborhood. We would love to take you and your local partners through our two-year multi-sector cohort that we call City Shapers. Cohorts launching this year will be partially funded by the Lilly Endowment, so it's a great time to jump in. We have taken three communities through this process already and would love to bring it to you next. Contact us today to learn more at fcsministries.org.
Jimmy, I think I've seen some footage where you have been on Capitol Hill testifying before Congress. What had you up there doing that work?
Well, you know, I think overall, probably, you know, I'd like to tell you it was on my list of knowledge. I think I drew the short stick on that. So, no, you know, sharing this very things we're talking about with Congress and, you know, how the SNAP program is very much a part of communities. It's a safety net to help our citizens you know, be able to feed their families as they're trying to work through life. And I think, again, the model you all have and helping people get to a point of sustainability is fantastic. But just telling that story about the communities like you all serve, I think in every testimony I have made sure I shared the Carver Market story. And so just been very fortunate on that aspect also. I still think that our nation has challenges. There'll always be differences of opinion, you know, and we can go into all the political realm and everything. At the end of the day, I think the country still works from the standpoint that a guy from a little bitty grocery store in Alabama can sit in front of the nation's leaders and tell their story. I just think there's still something to be said for that. And I've been blessed to have that opportunity on several times. And, you know, it's just, again, and they are, you know, you watch the news and you see what you see. You go through a process of testifying like that. And when it's over, you meet people that are really trying and people that get it and people that want things to happen. And then there's politics, navigating all that through that environment. But I will also tell you again, with all that we see, there are really still a lot of very good people serving our country up there that want to do the right thing. It's just politics is tough. But just trying to share our story. So just everything we've just talked about and let them know what a difference it makes to have a neighborhood grocery store.
And what, like, you know, one of the reasons, obviously, FCS got into the grocery business is the neighborhood had been a food desert for a considerable amount of time prior to getting the doors of Carver Market open. How could the grocery industry at large, or other, whether it be policies, whether it's like local, state, federal government, are there other systems factors that are going on that could help maybe solve this food desert thing that we're dealing with? What do you see from just the industry side? What could be done to help solve so many communities living in a food desert?
You know, I think that and there's been some fair progress in the healthy HFFI, Healthy Food Financing Initiative program. There was last week, we had a senator from New York that introduced a bill for to greatly expand the funding for that program. So I think first and foremost is, the ability to have some funding to go into the food deserts to either, a lot of times maybe there was a store somewhere and it closed. And so a lot of times there's renovations to get that store back in a good shape to be able to serve the neighborhood. And that's very costly. Just all the things to get a store cranked up if it's being built from the ground up. So I think from the government side, it's continuing to incentivize people and help them get over this initial cost of getting the store up and going. Mm-hmm. It's on a retailer to run it, but ways to be able to get the stores opened again. I think this continuing battle over the SNAP program is just absolutely ridiculous. Mm-hmm. It is probably, if it's not the most effective, it is one of the most effective mm-hmm. programs in the history of the federal government. Countless research has shown that the return for one SNAP dollar is about anywhere from $1.53 to about $1.74. They create jobs. They're a safety net for those who need some help right now. We still see people that are working two jobs and trying to make it, and SNAP is a way they close that gap on that. They are trying. Mm. So besides the incentives to help open stores in areas where SNAP is higher penetration of that, due to economics, and just quit playing these games with the program and fund it and all these ups and downs and cuts and all this stuff and arguments and all those things, they just need to be left alone. And I think, using examples of FCS of how to, whether it's rural or urban, how to bring communities back to life, a holistic approach like you all use, that's the story I try to tell, is that the food store is an anchor, but along with that, let's talk about housing. Let's talk about, other economic opportunities. And once again, I wouldn't have any knowledge of those unless I had been involved with you guys. Mm-hmm. That is a better conversation if you get in the offices on either side of the aisle. Mm-hmm. That is a better conversation when you say, look, there's a broader picture than just a SNAP program that you are concerned about. Mm-hmm. There are economic jobs, there's revitalization of housing, and there's improvement of this. I've never got any pushback from either side when I had that conversation. And so I just think those two things there, incentives to get stores open and community groups like you all to support it and be the champion for the communities and get our governmental officials to see it as a much broader initiative that the store's an anchor of.
Yeah. Jeff, what about you? What do you think are some of the barriers that could come down just from an industry standpoint that could allow us to start breaking up these food deserts?
Definitely echo the food stamp. We had a perfect example, you know, post-COVID, we gave a ton more food stamps to folks. And guess what they did? They bought more food. It wasn't, you know, and hopefully someone was doing a case study, right? Because I can tell, give you all kinds of anecdotal evidence of how our customers were just partly thrived during that time because they finally had enough. I can't tell you pre-COVID and now much longer past COVID how often we watch people spend their last EBT dollar, right? And that just wasn't happening during that year and a half where we had the extra benefits. And my gosh, for people to actually have enough, for us not to put this judgment on them that we have to control their, you know, their lives and their decisions that they make, and just give them the freedom to make the decisions out of abundance, I felt was just a tremendous success story, and wish that we could continue that. In terms of industry and city, I think I know there's economics behind this, but you know, the fact that a lot of stuff gets delivered on 18-wheel trucks is, you know, if we could think of a different delivery model where groceries get delivered in smaller quantities, so that urban stores can get more easy access to goods, would be a great way of thinking about it. Of course, again, from a city planning standpoint, you know, parking minimums, density requirements, those kind of things go a long way to help making stores a little bit more successful. I think just thinking more broadly about how to bring in the smaller operators, right? The Jimmy's, the Carver Markets, you know, people that care about that neighborhoods. You know, Publix and Kroger and the big guys, they do a great job. They're fantastic. They do phenomenal work with providing food access, but their business model is what it is. And that has created some food deserts. And so, you know, if we want to solve it, for me, it's not solving it with getting a Publix to open a new store or getting a Kroger to open a new store. It's finding the next Jimmy Wright. It's finding the next Carver Market. It's finding community groups that, and then the industry, you know, being willing and to partner alongside and, you know, provide access, provide training, provide the commitment, the long-term commitment that operators need to make this work.
You know, I know that you guys make a million decisions every week that the average grocery customer doesn't even register, that what you guys have to think through day in and day out. So, but there's got to be some overriding principles for you to filter all those decisions through, right? And I know that we need to make money, we got to make budgets, we got to pay salaries, but it's more than the bottom line, right? Like, so what are the filters that you guys are using to make all those major and minor decisions that just come with every day of running a small market store?
You know, I think right now, and this has been, and Jeff goes back to COVID, which changed our industry tremendously as far as supply and having to think through the supply chain, the availability of product. You've got so many manufacturers who just decided that COVID made them cut back the amount of product variety they make, and you know, and to change in how they sell that product from a promotional standpoint. Now, we have the basic block and tackling of running the store every day and having good people and the store's clean and the shelves are full and all that. I probably spend more time than ever right now. Some of this is back to the supply situation and some of it is the economics of the business today. I probably spend more time I've ever spent trying to find something that we can sell our customers at a very affordable price and still make a little money on there. That probably consumes more time than ever. We're hunting the deal, to be honest with you. So, you know, we're trying to call around with multiple suppliers so that we can get the best quality at the best price on chicken or pork chops or, you know, lettuce or whatever it may be. And just trying to get up every day and trying to feed families as affordable as possible. We've always done that. But again, post-COVID, it is really something we have to work on very hard every day to make that happen for the customer.
you know, so as a nonprofit, we're always asked, do you all survey your customers? And surveys are important, right? But I always say we have 300 surveys a day, right? I trust what people buy more than what they say they're going to buy. And so we, you know, in terms of what decisions we make, we let the customer lead and we follow what they're doing. You know, Jeff can decide, and Jimmy's better than I am, knowing what to put in the store. But, you know, what Jeff wants may not be what our customers want. And so, yeah, for sure, we try to find things as cheap as we can. But ultimately, in a small space, we have to make what space we do have work. And so we can't have stuff on the shelves that people aren't buying. And so spending a lot of time looking at that, seeing what people are buying, what might we could put adjacent to that, that folks will buy, listen to customers. You know, our store has probably turned over the inventory of what we have, you know, two or three times in the last 10 years just by responding to what folks want. And so, again, you know, we're in the food business, but you don't sell food without people. And so putting people first, my son is, he just got a job at Ace Hardware. And so he's listening to the Ace Hardware customer service. And customer's always right. Never say no, you know, always show them all this stuff. And he actually did work for Carver Market for a while. And he kind of quit, kind of got fired. No, he didn't fire. I didn't fire him. he's a seasonal employee and the season ended. But it really is, you know, yes, there's a million decisions to make. But the reality is, if you treat people right, and you have, you know, an inkling of business acumen, you're going to make a store work in any form or fashion, right? And so at some point, maybe the neighbor tells us they don't need a grocery store anymore, and then we do something else. And so for us, you know, yes, we're running a business, but most importantly, we're here to serve our neighborhood and what they want. And so we're going to listen to them and make decisions based on what they want.
You know, guys, one thing I will kind of plant the seed while we're here is this new food as medicine, food is medicine kind of movement. That one is really ramped up. They had a huge conference in Washington last week that most all of the major politicians were there. There's two sides to that. Is one is there's an argument to limit the items you can buy on SNAP, which is going to create a real chaos in trying to do that. The other side is to incentivize fresh, you know, to purchase fresh foods. And so, you know, we've already seen some of that. Jeff's done some of the double up food bucks kind of deals and Carver up there. So to say that I think the next frontier for us, so to speak, is how do we align the neighborhood store with the food as medicine movement? And we're both in areas, I think, where there are a lot of resources to do that, from the healthcare networks in Atlanta or even where I'm at down here and universities and those things. So that's a big piece when we look at holistic. You know, we can talk about housing, we can talk about the grocery store. There here's a huge piece of the puzzle that we put in is, okay, now how do we help our people eat healthier? And I think with, you know, we've got a small kitchen in our store now, and Jeff's got the coffee shop and some food service equipment in there. How do we play into that space? And, you know, I don't have any desire for us and the things are being proposed to be the food police. I'm just trying to, I think our task is to create an environment where people want products that are better for them. And we've got to create that and educate the customer on there. So that's the next big step I see for all of us is how do we become the neighborhood place, not only for something to eat, but something it is better to eat. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the next big step for us.
Well, I appreciate you guys just in the way that you are innovating. I think, you know, there's no end to the list of all the really big problems that are facing our cities and communities, but I love that the solutions are often really small, right? As far as just a small market, neighborhood scale, just local answers to local issues. And just appreciate the way you guys enter into the struggle and that you're innovating to bring health and connectivity to community. So thank you for this conversation today. I appreciate you guys a lot. And Jimmy, thanks a million. Like Jeff said, if it weren't for what you're doing, Carver Market couldn't be here. So we're just extremely grateful for you. But thank you guys. I appreciate this conversation.
The best way to learn about our economic development work and everything else we do is to come see it for yourself. We love hosting guests in historic South Atlanta. Coming March of 2024, we will be hosting a 2-day immersive event called Open House. Come, meet our team, see our work, and walk the neighborhood. To register, go to fcsministries.org/openhouse. Place Matters is produced by Focused Community Strategies, whose mission it is to partner with under-resourced neighborhoods to provide innovative and holistic development that produces flourishing communities and God's shalom. Place Matters is hosted by FCS's training and consulting team. If you'd like to inquire about our training and consulting services, please reach out to us via our website or find us on LinkedIn and social media. This information can be found in the show notes. If you'd like to watch these episodes, the video can be found on our YouTube channel. If you like this episode, please share it on social media. Your support means a lot to us. This show was edited by Tim Rhodes with music by Eric North. Special thanks to David Park, Becca Klein, and Rose Silva at FCS for their work in organizing and recording these sessions. We would also like to say thanks to our partner, Lilly Endowment, Inc., whose Thriving Congregations grant has made this podcast possible.